Now, good evening, good evening, good evening. Welcome, 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 dear listeners. And wherever you find yourself, as always, you're here in the company of your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And this is your business and economic zone discussion points. Well, guys, I'm still amped about our discussion from last night. That's hence the reason I already signaled to you last night that we are continuing into the session. Now, remember, for today's session, the phone lines will be opened up as of from 7 o'clock, that now being 7 on the dot. But we're still going to have a magnifying glass on what the Organization for Economic and for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, had signaled with regards to Africa's urbanization or aspect of urbanization, or where the urbanization is a key component in the future, that being the growth, the prosperity, the expansion, the anything that looks in a fall in one or other direction with regards to positive development, they're keeping a keen eye on us. And ultimately, just to draw you back in terms of the discussion points that I highlighted on or touched on last night, was firstly giving you the scenario, the template of looking at Namibia. Why we only have one city, and how this one city, that being the capital, Windhoek, is the only, technically the major key or the major driving force in terms of Namibia's economic prosperity. Now, first and foremost, guys, it does paint a picture of an unfair setting. Yes, we've got to understand that as well. And secondly, onto that is also, it is somewhat, Windhoek has key constantly is the only sort of like economic area or zone in the country that is constantly moving, constantly dictating, constantly making the money, making the opportunities for the country. I point this out to you once again. If you just have to look at various skills that are being offered, most of them are being absorbed. And I'm talking about the skills offered coming from universities. Most of them are being offered and absorbed in the capital. Second, you can scatter it all around the country. That being coming from engineering to even the town planning people to even, you know, various other technical skills, they are scattered all across the country. And even if we talk about the mining activity that's also distributed across the country, that is predominantly, specifically, isolated in a handful of the regions across the country. Then I also gave you the example in terms of, you know, spreading out that economic sort of like activity over various urban areas, urban settings across the country. And I gave you South Africa's example. Then I gave you the most extreme one, that being of the United States, the US's layout. Brazil is also a good one. Australia is also a good one. But Australia has a bit of an issue because most of Australia's cities, which are the administrative capitals of each of their states, is on the extremities of each state. What do I mean by that? Well, Sydney, which is not the capital of Australia, which is actually Canberra, Sydney is the administrative capital of New South Wales. Canberra is the administrative capital and the capital city of Australia of the Australian Territories. It's known as the Australian Capital Territories, ACT. That's its acronym. Then you get Perth, which is the administrative capital of Western Australia. Then you get Melbourne, which is the administrative capital of the state of Victoria. So do you see what I mean? But if you go look at your map, where do all those cities lie? All of them lie on the coastline of Australia. Very few of its major urban centers lie in the middle of that country. But that's Australia. It's not part of Africa. We are in Africa. South Africa provides said very good template. Even a country like Nigeria has a very good template itself. A country with 200 to 300 million people. A very vibrant economy itself. A very fast-moving economy, just like South Africa's one. As well as also, if you had to look at Nigeria's layout, Nigeria has a city or a major urban area or urban setting within each of its states. Their regional or provincial or those authorities are also established in the form of like what the US has, states. They've got states. The same also to what Australia has. So then you see, okay, so they've got administrative capitals happening. The same idea is said to be applied here in the Namibian sense. However, as I mentioned to you, most of the infrastructure, if you had to look at the economic infrastructure of the country, everything has to pass through Windhoek. Everyone else is built or developed on the arteries of said transport infrastructure. The highways, the railway, Windhoek enjoys the international airport, although Walvis also is, you know, trying to compete. I don't know if they're trying to compete. I know that you can fly directly from, I think it's from South Africa to Walvis as well. But, well, we've also got to understand Walvis has a very precarious situation, is that they lie in a very protected natural habitat, that being the Namib Desert. So it makes development very, very, very tricky for a coastal urban area and economic center like Walvis. Walvis has the potential to explode, guys. But it's just about the aspect of, number one, water. Secondly, onto that is, how does it contend with something like the Namibian constitution that protects the natural environment? And that being that the Namib Desert is the oldest desert in the world. So ultimately, from all that hot air that I shared now with you with regards to our introduction, we get into the second half of our discussion. Now, the second half of our discussion, guys, we've got to remember that, and this is now me joining back to the feedback, the Davos feedback platform that President Geingob had this Monday, as well as also where the finance minister and the energy minister was also part of. In that same regard, I'm always going to bring this up so that you guys can understand the attention we're going to get. It's not attention that's going to convert immediately into an opportunity like tomorrow on the ground. No. Let's be realistic. But what we have to understand is, in terms of that entire discussion, what we've got to understand there is, first and foremost, guys, we have to compete. It's a pure, simple approach. We have to compete. Now, where I come from with the competing angle, or with the competition-based angle, is the competition within the African context as well. The Pan-African approach, which is born out of the Africa Free Trade Agreement, or African Continental Free Trade Area. I do not know why they went for such a long name. I mean, African already implies that it's continental. Why did you put continental into the name as well? But let's understand it. It's what it is. It's where it is currently. Now, the ACFTA, as it is known, that's technically a playing field for each country to compete on a continental area. It's supposed to link us all together to have this uniform economic approach, uniform trading approach with each other, something to mimic what the Eurozone looks like, and ultimately also what the, I almost said CONMEBOL, but CONMEBOL is the federation, the football federation from South America, but the South Americans have something similar. In Asia, they also have something similar. In Asia, it's the ASEAN, sometimes known as the ASEAN guys. The ASEAN guys, although they include Australia and New Zealand in that discussion with the US. I still don't know why you would include the US, because that would make it the Pacific trading area, but there is such an agreement as well. And we also have to understand most of it in terms of that ACFTA approach is, you know, to do away with this kind of cliquey business. The cliques that I'm talking about is SADC, ECOWAS, you know, all those kinds of stuff, the North African guys, all that, you know, that whole approach of establishing cliques on the same continent. It's actually to incorporate everyone in the same economic approach. Now, I'll share with you one aspect of the competition analysis that I'm going to mention. And it was already started last year in the ECOWAS region, to be specific. In the ECOWAS region, to be specific, the same ECOWAS guys, that whole cluster of countries. Now, I predominantly thought that it was just the French-speaking countries that were featuring in that ECOWAS, and that they had somewhat sidelined Ghana and Nigeria from this agreement. But ultimately, it's not so. It's not true. So my thinking had changed. Ghana and Nigeria form part of the ECOWAS approach. However,
kukuruka na yowamba, kukuningisa ozere, nukusespika na mpito domgara mokagura mkisigemeke, ramangako uwera o HIV. Ayo kukupopera tani kuiruga na maoko uko. Tokoras gara, ninkawa kurugana na yowamba. Moktura mwe hundiro liye yowamba zuma oko uko, dimo guanakuma pukuru gomanzi. Tumako WhatsApp kono morozo ye utantandatu zime, tatwe utantane, mbali ntambali, mbali ntane. Ndidingura ko Facebook, ko VMMC Namibia.
Now, coming back from our short break right there. Now, in terms of where I ended off with our discussion point is, if you had a look, apologies for that. If you had a look at some moves that were taken up last year, that's now in the ECOWAS region, is that in the ECOWAS region, and I'm talking about the competition scenario, and ultimately that the AFCFTA is meant for us to have this uniformity approach. In the ECOWAS region, even though the French-speaking, the Francophone countries, have the sort of like security issues with the two military juntas that have established themselves, they in Mali, and the second one I think is in Burkina Faso. With those approaches, they also went forward and signed a new economic agreement that brings into effect a new kind of currency. It's known as the eco currency. You guys can just read up on it. It's known as the eco. It's a common currency between the Francophone guys. Now remember, you've got Nigeria and Ghana factoring into the ECOWAS region. Now Nigeria themselves highlighted their concerns to this currency because they already, Francophone ECOWAS members, had already their own sort of like franc. It was known as the African franc or something franc. But this currency was supported by the French economy. Now, how it came out about, I'm giving you a broader sort of like economics discussion point here. How it came out, these concerns, was at the beginning of last year, 2021, some Europeans became aware that the French economy is not actually what it is. And many of their media only started making noise about it in the middle of last year. And I was wondering, why are they now picking on the French? Now, you and I, we know that the two biggest economies in the Eurozone is the French economy and the German economy. They are the only two economies that technically have like the big say in the entire Eurozone approach. They had the UK up to a point until the British decided to have Brexit for whatever other bright reason. I do not know. I still do not know till the day, and I'm still trying to stay clued up as to why. I do not know why you would cut off your own foot, take a cut off your own fingers and sew up your own mouth in order not to speak up without realizing the economic harm that you self-inflicting economic harm that you causing yourself, you know. And so the English are out of the question. So now it's just the French and the Germans. The French economy, guys, because of their colonial ties to the Francophone ECOWAS countries. These are Mali, Burkina Faso, Togo, the Gambia, all those chaps there, you know, east or west of Nigeria, up to Cameroon, all those chaps were supporting the French economy, meaning any economic activity that they were doing reflects or is recorded within the French economy's economic statistics. That then explains to you and me why they've got French soldiers on the ground in Mali, Burkina Faso, or let me just say in the Sahel region, just in the Sahel region, in the Sahel region. That explains the one reason. Then in the ECOWAS developments at the end of last year, the Francophone-speaking ECOWAS guys signed some sort of common charter between each other to bring in a new kind of currency for all of them. Now, here's the thing, guys. It's the same like the Eurozone. It's the same principle like this Eurozone. You've got five countries having a unified economy supported by, or not supported by, but that translates into one common currency that is, you know, interchangeable between the five countries because they all use the same money. They all use the same money. Now, when they did that, the Nigerians highlighted their concerns. Nigerians went, Owens, Owens, Owens. What are you guys doing? We are the ECOWAS. We're supposed to talk with each other. They ignored Nigeria's concerns. Nigeria also highlighted to them in the ECOWAS discussion about the security issues found in these latest, military juntas and military coups. Because you and I know that you can only have a stable economic picture in a country if you've got a stable political picture in place. You know, there's political stability. There's security for the citizens, the people that are the political actors. The state functions are all secure. Everything is running smoothly. That's what every economist looks like. They look at whether all those institutions are in place, where there's a sense of stability permeating through the whole scenario of a country, and, you know, how then the developmental policies can bounce from there or can start up from there. That's not what Mali is giving you. That's not the picture that Burkina Faso is giving you. That's not the pictures that you're getting right now. Now, it was Nigeria's own concerns. Now, what does that mean, guys? Well, it signals to you that there are cliques. There is a clique. There are these sort of like gentlemen's clubs, is what they used to refer to some policies that were always made by the colonial powers here on the continent. You know, that it was always decided in a gentleman's club, not in a parliamentary process. That, i.e., translating towards that they actually did not care about the livelihoods or the inhabitants of the continent in the decisions they would make. Now, it's the same kind of approach that is being permeated through from such developments, especially coming from ECOWAS. Now, we've got SADC as well. SADC has, in most cases, benefited one country in the whole SADC region, that being South Africa. We've got to understand that, guys, because I've had a brother that has traveled as far as Kenya, here with the eastern coast of Africa. And he says everywhere he has gone, and that was 2010, everywhere he went, he would see a ShopRite. A ShopRite. And the two operating car companies, the rental car companies, everything was just GP number plates all the way into Kenya. Now, does that not speak of, you know, one country deriving a major benefit? It does. It does. Now, already there, it points towards the urbanization aspect here on our discussion. On this point, guys, the urbanization aspect that the OECD points towards points always to business opportunities. Business opportunities. Now, remember the statistics that I offered you last night is that the first one was that as of 1990, the continent had 3,300 cities. It has shot up to 7,600. And I gave you the anecdotal approach of, in terms of like just, you know, a village like Divundu that had its own rezonings and establishments and everything taking place there. That's what they're also factoring in. And that is ultimately the types of planning that most global economic organizations look towards. Because if you always had to ask, you know, if people are constantly talking about the global warm, the global warming discussion or the climate change discussion, and then you get sort of like somewhat opposite discussion points coming from the OECD with in terms of like growth and stuff like that. Because usually you would say if you have a, you know, a fear or the permeating worry or the permeating concerns about the global the global climate discussion and the global warming discussion, the climate change discussion, and you would usually attribute that to, you know, that there is too much economic activity taking place that feeds into this discussion point. You are not wrong. You are not wrong. You are not wrong. Because you just have to look at a discussion point in terms of like, just look at like new cars, the updates in terms of the cars that you see here in the country, the cars that are sold here and are driven here. The guys who work for Mercedes-Benz in Germany, all they want to know is how many streets are being tarred here in Namibia. That's all they want to know. If they hear that the Ministry of Works or Roads Authority or the RCC or whoever is a contractor in terms of laying a new tar road, then they go like, okay, let's bump up production in South Africa to feed into that new expansion. That then goes to the tire brands, you know, because they themselves also go like, okay, so there's increased activity going to take place in terms of there will be more demand. And then they will just increase production. So yes, you are right to be concerned with regards into the global climate discussion. You are right. It's the same thing you can attribute even to energy consumption. Because there's a lot of myths coming out, guys, with regards to the electric car industry. Because so many people are saying, switching over from a fossil fuel car to an electric car. I say electric car. We're not even on a green hydrogen car. No, we're not there yet because it's not here yet. Electric car. Electric car that you've got to plug in at your house or plug in at a charging station. Well, there's a lot of research coming out now that where people are saying, hello, guys, that would mean there would be a higher demand for the minerals used for the battery system for the car, for the electric car. Then alternatively also, that means that there is a greater demand for electricity supply from who? From Eskom in South Africa. So you already have these sort of like counter discussion points coming about. But the OECD is not highlighting that as yet, because if you have expanding urban areas, you will have expanding or growing or exponentially amplifying needs that need to be serviced. And one such need is electricity, meaning power, energy. Now, currently, there are five forms of energy that you can find in the Namibian market. I'm not talking about uranium mining, because we don't have a nuclear power station in the country. So you can't even think about it. So Van Eyck is a coal-powered station, eh? It's a coal-powered power station. You've got petrol, you've got diesel, you've got jet fuel, and you've got the fuel that they use for boats, for marine traffic, marine vehicles, vessels at the coast. So you got those five energy sources. Five of them. All of them are imported. All of them are imported. We're not making one. We're not producing one. We're not refining one. All of them are imported. Now, if you've got increased traffic in terms of air traffic, that means there's more planes landing at your international airport, which leads then to increased traffic heading throughout your country in terms of on the road networks. Yeah. Guys, you just have to look at the rate of consumption. You just feed in one end and you see the whole experiment permeating through. So with that discussion point happening there, it is always a bonus for any of the major development organizations around the world to go like, okay, for sure. So we can assume that Namibia is going to have new metropolitan zones occurring in the north, in the south, potentially to the coast, to the west of the country. The east, well, let's give it a little bit of time. So in that same vein, guys, still staying on Namibia's discussion point.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Now coming back, and I'm signaling once again out there to you guys that the phone lines are open from now up until the end of the program, up to 7:30. If you don't have the studio number, it's 083-288-401, 083-288-401. And come through, let me hear your ideas. But I'm heading back to some of the discussion points. So the OECD sees in their report, the one that I've got open up here in front of me, is that from these 2006, that they based their report from the 2,600 cities that they measured or they accessed from 34 countries. And they indicated here that urbanization in the continent contributes to better economic outcomes and higher standards of living. True. That is true. You just have to do a basic example. In urban areas, you get the best schools. You get the best facilities. You get the best services. You get the best products. You get the best properties. You get the best jobs. You get the best retail experiences. You get the best working standards. Now, from that point of departure, it links in back just before the ad break with what I said. It points towards increased consumption rates on energy sources. If you're someone that is in tune with the global climate discussion, you know, you can siphon through all the, you know, sort of like environmental activist noise. You know, if you can work past Greta Thunberg and the attention she always gets, and you really go and listen to the people that are the knowledge bases on this, they will point to you in terms of like, if you increase population densities in various areas, for example, with urbanization, it points towards an increased absorption rate on certain services and on certain energy sources. Now, you've heard perhaps, guys, from someone like the city of Windhoek, for example. They constantly use that phrase known as a smart city discussion point. It's one of those ways where local authorities around the world are trying ways in terms of reducing their carbon footprint impacts or their impacts, their contributions in that same vein. I'm not going to get into that as well. Because you and I know if a city becomes bigger or if a town becomes bigger and it starts expanding, it needs more space for people because people have got families and they will need more living room, living space. There will be expansions. There will be new developments. There will be new schools. There will always be an increased carbon footprint. There's no way you can avoid it. There's only an approach in terms of how you can manage it. Now, you and I know, for those of us who are, Windhoek natives, Windhoek has always had a water issue. You guys know it, those that live here in Windhoek. You and I, we know Windhoek has always had a water issue. And it's not because it's a drought scenario. No. The water sources compared towards Windhoek's size. Guys, if you have not known it, Windhoek is being serviced or sources its fresh water from more than two sources. From more than two sources. Now, that already points to you that there are, what? Alarm bells sounding off somewhere. That just means what? What does that mean? Well, that means essentially that you've got the size of an urban settlement that potentially is potentially putting strain on the resources, the natural resources that it draws from. Now, these natural resources are replenishable, remember? But it also depends, because in the global climate discussion, we just came out of a drought. The city of Windhoek, because Windhoek is a city. We came out of a drought, which included the rest of the country as well. And we were this close with the Cape Townians, because the Cape Town themselves, were entering into a drought at that one stage. That was 2017, 2018. We were coming out of our drought. In Cape Town, they were saying, let's look to Windhoek and how to manage water. Now, do you know what's the size of Cape Town? Cape Town is the size of Namibia's population. That's Cape Town. 3 million people. 3 million people as of the information that I am drawing from, which was 2011. 3 million people in one city. Windhoek has what? We should now be at 500,000. Or just past 500,000 at least. And on the surface area, Windhoek is the third largest city on the continent. The third largest city on the continent. Now, for those of us guys who have had the privilege of driving through Windhoek from one end to the other, I'm now talking from the very privileged areas of the city to the very underprivileged and underdeveloped sides of the city. I might sound like a politician, guys, but I'm not a politician, please. But you just have to understand the two economic spheres that exist in any urban setting. You can see where the quickest rate of expansion is taking place. The quickest rate of expansion is heading to the west of the city. The slowest rate of expansion is to the east of the city, to the south of the city, and it's virtually stagnant, but slightly merging to the north of the city. What do I mean there? You've got that Elisenheim development happening here between. And somewhere in between, there's also a informal settlement. I don't know. It's got like a currency name, $1 or something, or 1 rand or something, 5 rand or something like that. The same is also happening with Okahania on the other end. Okahania is technically just stagnant as it is, but it is expanding southwards to Windhoek. You guys have seen it. That is the scenario in terms of if you look at the urban rate of urbanization or even just the growth or the expansion rate with regards to an urban setting. Now, the major question always comes in, guys. Resources. Resources. You know, from the literature that you find in the local print media, to hear us talk radio at Eagle FM, to the various organizational representatives, government and agency representatives that we here at Eagle FM have had the privilege to access, bring you those discussion points, bring you their say, their expertise, to sometimes the standalone experts, the standalone activists, the standalone people, knowledge-based, the individuals in the Namibian society, all of them will give you an underlying message when it comes to, you know, various economic discussion points. It bears and centers on squarely on one key element: resources. Resources. Now, I'm telling you another aspect that is another discussion point of competition. Because ultimately, without realizing it, our capital city is technically monopolizing resources in some form. And I'm not talking about on the economic front. But we've got to understand, guys, there is political leadership in the other regions that have to play their part. they have to realize, do you want to see your town look the same for the next 50 years? The same houses, the same offices? Or do you want to see some sort of development taking place? Except now for Marintal. Except for Marintal cannot, guys. Unfortunately not. You just have to go look at some old geological discussion points reports about Marintal that stem from, you know, pre-independence reports that were done. Marintal technically cannot take much expansion. It's the only town in the country that cannot take much expansion. They cannot. If you ask me why, well, it has to do with the aquifer that's below it, and also how thin the ground level is between the surface and the aquifer. That's where you get the discussion point with regards to sinkholes. If you know what a sinkhole is, a sinkhole, it occurs when an aquifer has been drained, technically, or accessed, and water has been pumped out and it is not being replenished. Then the pressure that the aquifer provided in order to, for stability purposes, creates sinkholes. The moment you have a high influx or high density or high volume of a mass on a specific area of that ground above that aquifer, then things just fall through. Dangerous. Dangerous. So we have to take Marintal out of any as discussion point. Marintal just has to be a drive-through, you know, just you wave and you say goodbye to hit Tses and Kiatmatsu to the south. But beside that, we also have to look at the characteristics of urbanization as well, guys. Now, I'll share some discussion points here with you. In the 90s, Okahanya and Rehoboth, which are the two larger urban areas north and south of the capital Windhoek, have been historically feeding the workforce of the city, the capital city. They've been feeding the workforce. They have been the workforce for the capital. And I'm not even going to talk about, you know, the development aspect of, you know, trying to decentralize. No, I'm just going to stay away from that. Now, that points to you the monopolization aspect that Windhoek enjoys. It has the carrying capacity then. It has the absorption capacity to generate employment for people from two external urban areas to come and work in the capital. And then they go home. And they come back the next day, and then they go home. Now, it has been the only two saving graces for those two urban areas is that technically land ownership in the capital is exponentially almost realistically, it's unaffordable. It has become unaffordable. And in most cases, that they are reinvesting their salaries, their wages, their earnings that they make here in the capital back into their local communities. That being Okahanya to the north, Rehoboth to the south. So you've got these two commuter communities servicing the workforce for Windhoek. Or providing the workforce for Windhoek. It's a dangerous scenario. It is a dangerous scenario. Because let's, for example, say that Windhoek reaches a plateau in terms of providing the kinds of jobs that can accommodate these two communities. Meaning, those jobs perhaps become less and less scarce. No, not scarce. They become more scarce. They become fully saturated because now you have got locals in Windhoek who also want those jobs and who can get to those job opportunities faster than people from the two external communities of Okahanya and Rehoboth. Now, that's one of the other dangers of urbanization that you've got to also factor in. Commuter communities. The very, very fragile role that they find themselves in. The very, very fragile role that they find themselves in. Now, as I told you guys, both those two communities are in two different regions. And it is up to the development agendas of the political leaderships in those two regions to provide the opportunities there. Let's be frank. Let's be honest. Let's be straight to the point. Rehoboth is in Hartab. It's Hartab's responsibility to look after Hartab's own or largest urban area. It's not Marintal. It is not Marintal. It is Rehoboth. Okahania is probably larger than
Paratus Mobile LTE. Everything you want, whenever you want it. Start uploading, downloading, liking, and sharing all your experiences with the world. Starting from 100 Namibian dollars per month, including VAT for prepaid, or 345 Namibian dollars per month, excluding VAT for postpaid. Get online with high-speed internet the way you want it. Visit na.paratus.africa for more information.
Now, coming back, just where I ended off with our last sentence, is that it's up to those two regions of Orchard and Chupa and Hartab to have their own developmental plans for Okahania, which is and I believe, I'm saying it boldly now, I believe Okahania is probably bigger than Otjiwarongo. I believe Okahania is bigger than Otjiwarongo. I believe it. I have a sneaky suspicion that Okahania is way bigger than Otjiwarongo. And we know, without a doubt, that Rehoboth is larger than Marintal. But the question you've got to ask yourself is, after 30 years, you know, why hasn't the urbanization element changed a little bit? Why haven't they been given the opportunity to sort of like develop in their own right as two other cities, as two types of other cities? Rehoboth does not have a water issue. Rehoboth only has an administrative issue. The same for Okahania as well. They do not have a water issue. They do not have electricity issues. Neither does Rehoboth as well. They don't have electricity issues. It's an administrative issue that they've got. Now, if Namibia is to harness the opportunities, you know, that our current president is trying to create, which they now have seen has actually caught the attention of the serious and big money out there. If we are to get there, we've got to look at these kinds of scenarios. These kinds of scenarios. We are not Germany with 80 million people who are stuck in a space as big as the Karas region. We are not Germany, where you can have commuting communities. I mean, the town of Wolfsburg, guys. The town of Wolfsburg is the hometown of VW International. VW, the company, the car company. Wolfsburg's whole workers come from a town 10 minutes away on a train ride in Germany. Their whole workforce lives in another town. The same for the town of Leverkusen, who is owned by the pharmaceutical company Bayer. Bayer, the pharmaceutical company, they own the town of Leverkusen. Their whole workforce is also a commuting community from 10 minutes, 20 minutes away. We are not Germany. That means our urbanization approach has to be uniquely Namibian. How do you resuscitate economic activities, or how do you start up economic activities from the ground up in two such commuting communities as Okahania and Rehoboth, so that they don't supply a workforce predominantly to Windhoek, because Windhoek has already 500,000 people that Windhoek needs to take care of. And these 500,000 inhabitants are competing for the same jobs that the inhabitants from these two towns of Okahania and Rehoboth are competing for as well. So now you've got a monopoly situation created here, where Windhoek is the only one who is a task that Windhoek did not ask for, but that Windhoek actually took, to supply employment and services and other prosperity, and other opportunities to three communities. Now, do you guys see the knock-on effect right there? do you guys see how fragile such a scenario in terms of the urbanization aspect is? Now, if we are to factor into this discussion from the OECD as being the next frontier, the next economic opportunity frontier, whatever we want to call it, we've got to sort some things out. Now, there's nothing any government official in this country can do with regards to migration. Because urbanization has to do with migration as well. And that's internal migration. People moving from one part of the country to another part of the country, because ultimately that is a right that you derived from the Constitution. You can move wherever you want to. You can live where you want, except for, you know, obvious exceptions that exist. So, in order for, you know, in order to stem major rates of urbanization or migration from rural to urban areas, the various urban areas across the country have to step up. They have to show up. They have to put on their best suit or their best ballet gown or ballet dress. They've got to take out their best shoes. They've got to polish them, like we say in Afrikaans. You know, you really have to see your face. No, I won't use the Afrikaans one. It might be misinterpreted. But you really got to polish your shoes so well that you can see your own reflection in it. And then you've got to go and do the business. Because really, guys, really, 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 Namibia is creating its own imbalance problem. I'll call it an imbalance problem. Because you can have a scenario where you have a good imbalance, and can have a scenario where you've got a catastrophic imbalance taking place. Catastrophic obviously has to point to negative. Now, in that same point direction of the negative one, Windhoek is absorbing most of everything. Windhoek is determining most of everything. Most of everything. You see, even here on the Business Economic Zone, the discussion points that Kanjengo, with regards, because his field of expertise mostly lies in the agricultural, you know, the rural agricultural economic approach that he loves talking about. Now, right there, that whole sector is so pivotal that it can revive most of the urban areas in the central north and far north and far in northeast of the country. That whole sector alone can do its job there. They can help with various, you know, economic activities taking place, thus leading to some sorts of urbanization, increased economic activity, you know, spillover events taking place in the various urban settings that are within or around those agricultural, you know, activities. But if there's nothing, people are going to move away because they see there's no opportunities, and they're going to try to come to Windhoek. Or they're going to move to the coast. You guys already see it. All the universities, and I mentioned it last night, all the universities are here in the capital. People don't want to send their children to a satellite campus of the main university in Rundu or in Opuo, like the article we had in last week, with, no, 2 weeks back, of some of the stranded students who want you know, the satellite campus at Opuo to be brought back. Because now they have to drive, pay 300 bucks to drive to one town in one of the northern regions there, which is the closest to them. And they have to pay 300 bucks back on the same, you know, to drive there and to come back just to write or just to register. What a waste is that? That means there's a monopolization of a service. There's monopolization taking place right there. Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing again. And it brings us once again full circle back to where I left off. on the Rebus and Okahania discussion. It is for the powers that be that are find themselves in charge of those two regions or in the Kunene region to get the development agenda in order. You've got urban areas. Now see how you can get said urban areas to play a pivotal developmental agenda, a pivotal developmental role. Why not? Because if you've got someone coming from Rundu, he studies what? Land use planning or land management or something in that, you know, that land planning perspective. Does he want to go work in Rundu for the Rundu Town Council? No. He'll try and stay here because he's seen how nice the life is here in the capital. He'll probably move to the coast to one of the uranium mines because that's the best, that's the next best level in terms of urban lifestyle that you can find. He or she would not want to go live even in Oshakati. They will not move there. They would not even say no. They wouldn't even say yes to move to Kitmans. No. They will be and they will try to stay where the best services are, the best living standards are, and where the best quality of life can be found. So they will spend $1 million in buying a house or a flat here in the capital. They will spend $1 million on buying that latest Mercedes-Benz, car coming out this year. They will spend that money. But they know they will at least live in a very, very well-serviced urban area. Where they know they've got access to 5 malls. They know they can go anywhere they want. Because most of the biggest lodges and game farms is centered around the capital. So they know they'll stay close to Windhoek. But can you say the same for Otjiwarongo? Can you say the same for Kitmans? Can you say the same for Oshakati? Can you say the same for Rundu? No. No. You cannot even say the same for Hobabas. No. So what's the thing? What's the deal? If we have to be part of this OECD approach, their forecasting, their advice, we got to get our socks ready, guys. We got to pull up our socks. We got to put on our best school uniform and outperform in order to impress the headmaster. So the headmaster can say, hey, you students did well. Now that does leave us up with what? 2 minutes here on today's program. I know it has been a very sort of like in-depth discussion point, but we've got to understand, guys. Economics. It's not just about numbers. It's not accounting. Accountants love numbers. Accountants and auditors, they love numbers and procedures. That's why I gotta like the economists. They look at a holistic picture. Now you gotta look at every picture. And urbanization provides the next opportunities. Urbanization will lead to these next opportunities. Urbanization will lead to us being able to capitalize on projects like the Green Hydrogen Energy Project. Urbanization will allow us to capitalize on the new technologies out there. Even if you think about the role blockchain can even play in technology heading ahead. Not cryptocurrency, please, not cryptocurrency. Blockchain, just the technology, blockchain. The role it will play in the future, because people are already looking there. The pro vice chancellor of UNAM, Professor Anicia Peters, she made a very profound, statement on Tuesday at that online GBV function that where I attended. It was where she said that in some cases the industries are already heading out of the fourth industrial revolution and they're now heading into the fifth. I'm like, what? The fifth? I thought we're still trying to get into the fourth. So, in that same vein, guys, Urbanization is one of those unlocking features for a country, but it's the way we're going to deal with it. It's the way we're going to take it up, and it's the way we're going to head into the future. On that note, this has been your business and economic segment here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM. And guys, this is a good night from me. Stay tuned as the matriarch is ready to make her entrance for tonight's session. Stay tuned here on your number one talk radio station, and let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.
So, jy het dit gedoen. Jy het jou laat besny.
Jep,
dit was baie dapper. Was dit nie vrek seer nie?
Dit was net so effen seer, maar dit is die moeite werd om myself teen seksueel oordraagbare infeksies te beskerm. En dit is soveel makliker om skoon te hou.
Wel, as jy dit so stel, dan moet ek dit dalk ook laat doen.
Bra, dit is die regte ding om te doen. Man up, kry 'n besnyding. Om 'n gratis besnyding te bespreek of om meer uit te vind, stuur 'n WhatsApp boodskap na 081-309-2729 of besoek ons Facebookblad by VMMC Namibia.
Hello Namibia, welcome to the world of Lela Pay. Lela Pay is an easy-to-use payment and booking mobile app that allows you to send out classified adverts or messages to your consumers and have them published in real time. What can you do on Lela Pay? Place classified adverts and messages on the Eagle FM app, Imba app, Lela Pay app, and place adverts in the Villager and many more vendors. You can also make payments. One can place messages of any events, including promotion, invitations, birthday wishes, funeral notices, and any announcement you wish to announce on a national level, starting from $3.50 per message. So, how does it work? Download Lela Pay app and open the app. Step 1. Register an account for free and log in to your account. Step 2. Go to your wallet balance and fund your account by filling in the required details. Step 3. Once registered, go to the vendor icons and select a vendor of your choice, Eagle FM or The Villager. Step 4. Schedule your message. Type it out and press send. Step 5. Once sent, your message or advert will shortly get published on the Eagle FM app, Imba app, Lela Pay or The Villager newspaper. You also have the option to submit artworks for your adverts. Send these to digital@omalaiti.com and they will be published shortly. To be added onto the vendor list, contact us at 081-203-9633 or 083-288-400 or simply email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Lela Pay. Download it today. Available in the App Store and Google Play.